Miles Laboratories, makers of Alka-Seltzer and One-A-Day brand vitamins, present Robert St. John, notary and war abundant.
Good morning. This is Robert St. John speaking again today more in Ottawa and bringing news and another story about people. I'll be back with news from all over the world.
Friends, do you check your Alka-Seltzer supply regularly? Well, it's a mighty wise habit to acquire. And know that you'll never be caught short. Just remember this. When those tablets get down to four, that's the time to buy some. Rely on Alka-Seltzer for the relief can give from acid infection, muscular aches and pains, headache discomfort, and the achiness that so often accompanies a cold. Yes, keep Alka-Seltzer on hand all of the time. Never be without in your home. Remember, that's Alka-Seltzer in the blue and white package. Now back to Robert St. John.
Today, final victory at Okinawa seems finally at hand. The amazing news from that most vitally important island in all the world at the moment is that the Japanese defenders are giving up, surrendering in such numbers that no accurate track can be kept of how many prisoners they have taken. The 81-year-old campaign has reached the mop-up stage. The several thousand remaining enemy soldiers have been carved up into pockets of 10 or 20 or 50 soldiers each. They have only three choices: slaughter, surrender, or suicide. Some are still holding out in caves until our soldiers and Marines fall upon them and kill them. Some are giving up. Some are following old Japanese tradition and are leaping into the sea. But even as that bloodiest campaign of the whole Pacific War nears its triumphant end, American forces are preparing for the next amphibious leap toward Japan proper. Radio Tokyo reports more than 100 American transports are riding at anchor off some islands just 20 miles from Okinawa. Tokyo is also looking for a new land in force on Neo, far to the south. As a result of our campaign from the air, three more Japanese industrial cities are today in flames. More than 3,000 tons of firebombs were dropped on them from super fortresses, and all three are believed wiped out as military targets. Over in Europe, a new obstacle appeared today on the path to peace. Belgium dead being threatened, one of the strangest internal conflicts in history. Even diplomatic observers say they are mystified by the opposition which developed against the return of King Leopold II to the throne he occupied so deadly and just started the war. He refused to flee like other merchants to some safe spot abroad. But his dreams of becoming a hero of loyalty faded. First communists opposed him, and then socialists, and then liberals, and now others arguing against him simply because he married a commoner, a Belgian girl of the people, as they say over there. In Moscow today, they're winding up that trial of 16 police leaders accused of laying the groundwork for World War Number 3. NBC's Bob Agadoff radioed us this morning that the prosecutor is not going to ask the death penalty for any of the defendants. From Germany comes word Nazis had planned to blow up $5 billion worth of art treasure they'd looted from Austria and Bavaria. The refusal of art curators to prevent the plot from being carried out. Another dispatch from that land ruled by Adolf Hitler says that our army's non-fraternization policy is going to be gradually modified. Eventually, it made admissible for American soldiers to engage in social intercourse with the German people. The only domestic news I can give is that it's cold in this part of the world, as cold as hot in New York when I left the East. The tall corn out here in Iowa isn't going very well, and I am shivering in my thin summer suit. Well, that's the news, and now I'm going to take you on to the other side of the world, the most fabulous, fantastic land on the face of the globe, that hundreds of thousands of men in uniform have seen in the past couple of years. I want to show you India through the eyes of an ordinary American merchant seaman. He's Albert Eber of Tampa, Florida. Like many in America, way until it began, Albert's horizons extended little beyond the boundaries of his own state. Old, of course, when he was younger, when he was in school, he did study geography. He still remembers the big red curve of the maps, all tinted in pinks, greens, and yellow. But it was a dull subject. What normal boy cares about memorizing the imports and exports of his country? And a happy day when he closed that geography book for good and passed into, well, manual training and things that made some sense. When the war came along, Albert signed up with the merchant marine and suddenly found himself a world traveler with geography on him. Of all the strange places he's visited, hauling the munition of war, India he remembered best. He found the deep connection people there are curious about, difficult to understand, living lives of continuous friendship, for the most part extremely ignorant, very superstitious. Albert, at 24, knows quite a bit about India, for he's called at four of her principal ports, and he spent a lot of time browsing around on land.
Each of those port cities bustled with activity, and Albert knew that they were far more progressive and western than the hinterland. And yet, he was appalled at the squalor he saw. He told me it didn't seem possible that the modern world of ours, humans could live like that. It seemed to him like a flashback of dark ages. Just an example of their religious superstition is a story of how one day he went on a little private tour of the temples. It's called Karachi. He found one out in the outskirts of the city, sitting up of a hill. The sun was setting, and he made a striking silhouette against the evening sky. It was like one of the old Roman amphitheaters in which gladiators fought wild beasts for the amusement of Roman emperors. A building without a roof over it. He wasn't told he couldn't go inside, and so he just walked in. What he saw stopped him in his tracks. This was far more barbaric than anything the Romans had. A dead man was tied to stand across, and vultures were... Well, they were doing what vultures do. The relatives of the victim were seated close by, chanting their prayer to heaven. Al didn't stay long. Sometime later, he learned that he witnessed a secret burial service, and that it was fortunate for him that the Indians were so engrossed in their prayers that they hadn't noticed him. Al would like to talk about all the evidence he's seen over there in India, that the thousands of Americans who preceded had left some kind of an influence in the country, although not the kind of an influence he can be very proud of. Cities like Bombay and Calcutta, nearly all the native girls are experts at jitterbugging, at the latest American dances, and are willing to dance at the drop of a hat. In Calcutta tonight, all the winter garden run by a former well-known American prize fighter, and the orchestra played the latest tunes from Broadway's Tin Pan Alley. Right undernourished Indian urchins chirp out in slang as a man in uniform passes by. And the streets are full of shrewd Indians who have learned what souvenir collector Americans are. It's quite a sight to see them spread out exquisitely woven pieces of cloth or beautifully wrought bracelets and try to persuade the Americans to buy them for mothers, sweethearts, or wives. The Americans also learned the thing, too. They've learned that one must not purchase anything in a country like India with a bit of having but a price. But no matter how much of a bargain the American thinks he's finally won out of the haggling, the street corner merchant goes on knowing the truth that the American paid plenty. Robert long ago decided that begging is the national pastime in India. No matter where a man goes, natives get outstretched hands. If you give to one, you find that a crowd is following you. One day in Bombay, Robert was picking his way through the streets when a dirty-faced boy approached him with the inevitable outstretched hand, sobbing, "No mama, no sister, brother, backsheesh, mister." Backsheesh is the Orient word for tip. Well, he felt he couldn't refuse an orphan, so he gave boy a few small coins. Soon a whole mob of youngsters was trailing him, all of them chanting the same phrase, "No papa, no sister, no brother, backsheesh, mister." And the climax came when an old man of 70 came rushing up with the same chant, "No papa, no sister, no brother, backsheesh, mister." I've also liked to tell the time a native woman in Karachi took a baby in her arms and indicated to him by a few words of English and gestures that she wanted to leave the baby with him for a moment to do some shopping. She put the squalling into his arms and was off. 1 hour later, Albert despaired of the woman ever returning and took the child to the police station, where he learned that it's an old native custom that Indian women are always trying to get Americans to adopt children by the simple expedient of giving their youngsters a hold and never coming back for them. I asked Albert what he thought of India. Of course, an especially pertinent question right now, because British is just another small step toward its solution. Albert said that India needs is a chance in education, the masses, a chance for them to learn about medicine, sanitation, housing, proper use of land, how to live decently and with some degree of cleanliness and health. He's glad to have seen India of today. He has a few dreams of what the India of tomorrow could and should be like. I'll back with my favorite story of the day just a moment. The first word from Charles Lyon.
Friends, do you realize that you eat all a ton of food every year? Yes, the American eats nearly 15 times his weight in food each year. Yet in spite of this huge quantity of food, government surveys show that only 1 out of 4 people enjoys the full of good health that good nutrition offers. Good nutrition is the foundation of good health, and vitamins are vital to nutrition. In the average diet these days, one common deficiency is a shortage of vitamins. Now, some shortage of vitamins may be one of the reasons why so many people go to work egged out, nervous, irritable, and feel generally run down. Now, if you have not been feeling poorly, it may well pay you to start making sure of at least the basic daily vitamins. Now, you can do this easily and economically by taking a single one-a-day brand multiple vitamin capsule every day. Each one-a-day brand multiple vitamin capsule contains all the vitamins known to be essential in human nutrition, and 3 other vitamins as well. And remember, you need take only 1 capsule a day.
but it'll cost you only a dollar a month to try these quality guaranteed vitamins. Listen, here's our offer. Get 60 capsule package of one of the brand vitamins. Take one capsule every day for 60 days. At the end of that time, if you're not satisfied, take the empty package back to your druggist and he will gladly refund your money. We suggest you visit your druggist for one-a-day brand multiple vitamins. And then start every day one-a-day. Now back to Robert Now.
And here is my favorite story of the day. It's the people of Hastings, Minnesota, who just split in two violently opposed camps, all because Corporal Drojewski came home a 60-day leave. Corporal was wounded in Africa, been a prisoner of the Germans for a year and a half. He won a coveted infantry badge. Yes, he was Hastings' biggest hero in his home for 60 days. One thing he did was to get out his old bicycle and do some pedaling around. Unfortunately, he made the mistake of riding on the sidewalk at a confectionery shop run by Mr. Green. And Mr. Green complained. And when the corporal paid him attention, he swore out a warrant. And the next time Corporal Majestic came riding by, a policeman arrested him on a charge of violating an ancient ordinance that says that you cannot ride a bicycle on the socks in Hastings, Minnesota. The locals found him guilty and cost the corporal $3, and then the storm broke. The town's 6,000 residents split sections. The leads and the veterans of foreign wars took the corporal side. Others had with the confection land. The ventured a statement to think that returning heroes receive better treatment than this. There at rest, except that when his 60-day furlough is up, Corporal Modesty says he's going back into the Army for good because I'm civilianly a bit too complicated. And then at Robert St. John Lane, goodbye.
Friends, the World Program featuring John W. Vandercook will be heard on many of these same nations this evening, 7:15 Eastern, 6:15 Central Wartime. And Mr. Robert St. John again tomorrow.